so that we can, and indeed it's an honor to present ourselves before you, where we, in terms of the Constitution and the Act, account to you. So it's our honor to be here to account to you. Before I deal with the overview, I'd just like to take us historically through the developments of IFED. As we move into our third financial year as IFED, it's important to reflect on the process of translation from ICD to IFED thus far. In essence, the ICD vehicle had to change its wheels whilst the vehicle was moving to transform to IFED. There wasn't an opportunity to stop, change, and then continue functioning. Whilst the ICD was complaints directed and orientated, IFED is investigation orientated to comply with the imperatives of the Constitution. IFED has now an expanded mandate, both in extent and in depth. In this process of transformation, some aspects have been overlooked, not envisaged, or because of reprioritization have not been in place. Some of the stuff which we would have hoped would have been in place is not there yet, precisely because of the dynamics of the transformation from ICD to IFED. Historically, as far back as the financial year 2007-2008, the annual report reported that in 1997, the Department of Public Service and Administration had approved 535 posts for ICD as it existed then with its more narrower mandate. And at that stage, ICD only consisted of 31 people. This situation has presented since then problems for the department because it hasn't changed, and we stay with the same situation. Whilst there's been a measure of expansion, it doesn't come anywhere near where it should be. The total staff complement then, as I said earlier, was 31. The total staff complement now is 393. So it is still far short of the original approved staff complement by the DPSA, even though we have a new and expanded mandate through IFED. This has resulted over the years in a skewed expenditure pattern away from the core function, a significant capacity problem, and an element of underspending. These concerns indeed have been specifically noted and articulated by the Portfolio Committee over the years. However, it must be noted that towards the end of the tenure of the ICD, expenditure and expenditure patterns had stabilized. It was with the commencement of IFED that the element of asymmetrical spending and under-expenditure became a problem. This was because all the cogs in the new machine were not in place, and we were not able to absorb and utilize the resources required to fulfill the mandate. To give some perspective, whilst IFED is a tiny department in comparison to other national departments, it nevertheless has to report on performance monitoring, that to comply with accountability in exactly the same manner as any other large department, even a department more than 1,000 times the size of it. Other departments have institutionalized capacity to deal with performance monitoring, with accountability and performance reporting. I just still need to put that cog in place in our machine. In any event, in order to deal with the problems of capacity and in order to begin to fulfill IFED's mandate, a number of satellite offices were established over the years. The situation alleviated somewhat as a result of the satellite station. However, as a result of the outcomes of the departmental strategic session last year and a series of strategic sessions this year, the IFED management came to the conclusion that the concept of a satellite station approach needs to change, and capacitation needed to be looked at differently. We felt that the concept of satellite infers a temporary and interim solution. It also meant that the satellites themselves were continuously understaffed and under-resourced, and that the process of developing full capacity to fulfill the IFED mandate would be piecemeal and would be a perpetual task. As such, the IFED management, after much deliberation, came to the conclusion that we should move towards a concept of what we call the full complement status. The full complement status meaning the type of capacitation we would require to adequately fulfill our mandate. The department embarked on an extensive analysis, which included looking at number of policemen in particular areas, number of stations in station clusters in particular areas and provinces, cross-referencing this to population density, geographic spread, and the historic intake of cases. After interrogation of all these key aspects, a document was produced which includes the analysis and the conclusions that were reached. In any event, we have produced a document which is a strategy for achieving full complement status. We are in the process of finalizing and fine-tuning the costing of such a strategy.
Sorry, Mr. McBride, sorry to intervene at this stage.
Yes.
Maybe just to indicate, we appreciate the background and I think the new direction you want to take, but remember what we do, we deliberate today on the E&E that's currently before us. Because I presume those new strategic directions will need more financing and additional allocations, and that's not before us at this stage. So what I just want to advise, we can directly focus on the E&E that's currently before us that we must approve. I understand what you want to sketch the background, but what is quite important, the E&E that's currently before us.
Thank you, Chairperson. In short, to finalize that, we would then produce the strategic document and we would make it available to the committee, and we would ask the committee's support for it. With that said, I'd move on to my presentation. I would give an overview, and then the different program managers and the CFO will deal with the different aspects. So I'll move on to my presentation, Madam Chair. Just in terms of the legislative mandate, without belaboring it, is to indicate that it originates from the Constitution and culminated in the coming into effect of the IFED Act on the 1st of April 2012. Our mandate includes the following. Under Section 28 of our Act, the directorate may investigate any deaths in police custody, death as a result of police action, any complaint relating to a discharge of an official firearm by any police officer, rape by a police officer, whether the officer is on or off duty, rape by any person while that person is in police custody, any complaints or torture or assault against a police officer in the execution of his or her duties, corruption matters within the police initiated by the executive director on her own or after receipt of complaint from a member of the public, or a case referred to the director by the minister, an MEC, or the secretary, as the case may be. Any other matter referred to it as a result of a decision by the executive director, or if so requested by the minister, an MEC, or the secretary, as the case may be. And then, the second part of the mandate, 28.2, the director may investigate matters relating to systemic corruption involving the police. During the past year, and in the planning for the movement forward, we have seen a move from the focus on non-core issues to more proportional focus on our core functions. So we've cut down on the core, non-core spending patterns. And we've also implemented a number of cost-cutting measures in line with the instructions that come from Treasury. In drafting our process, our plans, our strategic plans, our APP, we considered the following in preparation. Cognizance of the annual report, the Auditor General's report, and the engagement with the Portfolio Committee on the 23rd of April 2013. We've also aligned this with the foresight instructions, the National Development Plan, the medium-term strategic framework, and our legislative imperatives. IPED has also had a series of internal deliberations to ensure alignment and compliance. One such document is a document I referred to earlier in my preliminary remarks. Is in our document which is developed, which will guide us in our strategic reprioritization. No consultants were involved in this process. It was done all in-house by the IPED senior management. We've also, as I said earlier, noted the valuable inputs from the Portfolio Committee and the Ministry. There were three drafts of the APC, three drafts of the ENE. The annual performance plan of 14-15 submitted to the National Treasury, the Auditor General, and the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation on the 31st of August 2013, 30th of October 2013, and 31st of January 2014, respectively. Approval of strategic plan and APP was done by the minister, by the former minister, my apologies. During the period 2014 to 2019, the capacity of the director to be strengthened to improve performance. This will include the following: alignment of the director's functions and priorities in line with the principles enshrined in the Constitution and the IPED Act. Internalizing the values and ethos contained in the IPED Act and ensuring that it flows throughout the department. Engaging in a process of organizational renewal and re-engineering and reorganization, which we have completed. We've looked at, in which we have started the process of it with our strategic expansion document. Integrating the directed systems, programs, and structures to enhance service delivery. We have already started that process. Alignment of the directed's planning, budgeting, and reporting processes. And the whole budgeting, the budgeting cycles, and ensure that we have alignment and that the different processes talk to each other. Concerns of the Portfolio Committee on capacity and lack of expansion is being addressed by the strategic reprioritization expansion document, which we at the final stages of costing. At the moment, the environmental factors which have been considered is the inadequate coverage of IPED across the country, increasing workload and inadequate capacity, and an increasingly complex investigations which we are receiving and we're having to deal with. Violent protests which complicate the work of the police and hence complicate our work. Unrealistic expectations by the general public and other state institutions. Misunderstanding of the role of IPED vis-a-vis other institutions. We have a high staff turnover, especially at lower levels, and this is due to historical factors at, in which place certain levels of our people at grades lower that were found in other departments. Insufficient funding of activities, lack of uniformity in applying investigative procedures. At present, we do not have capacity to comply with the Occupational Health and Safety Act. We have inadequate physical security, bearing in mind the threats that we face in the more complex and difficult investigations that we have now taken on. We also have limited ability to recover from catastrophic events. I know through you, Chair, I would ask that my different program managers would deal with their various aspects. The program one is administration, program two is investigations and information management, and program three is legal services, and program four is compliance monitoring and stakeholder management. And the first presentation would be by our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Linda Gutle-Nyong'o.
Maybe just to indicate, as in our previous interactions, we will first give the members opportunity if they want to ask specific questions on the presentation by the Executive Director. Then we will go to the different presentations and again another round. Maybe from my side, one of the important goals of this committee is to ensure that the NDP is executed, especially the demilitarization of the police. Now, in the NDP, there's a specific mention made of IPIT's role. I don't see in the overview if the Executive Director can just maybe expand on that issue. One of the challenges and risks is the insufficient funding of activities. But if we look at the spending pattern reports from Treasury as well as the AG, there is substantial underspending. I can't see how this committee could support a situation where we approve more funding if the current levels of funding are not adequate. And then the third question is got to do with the implementation of the IPIT Act. I think one of the important things is to say, well, at this stage, the Act is not really being implemented. Because you haven't been able to appoint your provincial heads due to various reasons. And if you look at the Act, there's specific roles that they must play. How do you see that, you know, develop over the next 6 months to ensure that the Act is fully implemented? That's my first three. Then I'll allow four members and then we'll take the first round. Ms. Colabon.
Thank you, Chair. There have been certain moves with the IPID. One relates to common assault, and it has been publicized to some extent that the common assaults are 60% of the workload and that common assaults should be dropped. Now, if I'm slapped across the face by a police officer, the first port of call for me will be the IPID officers. So, you know, common assault may not seem serious enough, but what would the citizens' then next step be if the IPIT said we're no longer going to investigate someone being slapped or pushed or shoved by a police officer? I mean, who do they go to? The inspector, the secretariat? No, there's no one left because this is the unit. So I'm very disturbed that that has even been a suggestion, and I'd like an explanation for that. It's really a great worry for me. There was reference to the satellite offices. I'd like an explanation for what happened to the George office, because the Pretoria and George offices were announced at the same time. Pretoria office has opened, but apparently the George office has not. So that leaves someone in that area about a four-hour drive to Cape Town to go and report a matter, and I want some input about the recommendations that are being given. In that, the feedback I'm getting is that the recommendations maybe it's just SAPS talking, I don't know. But from the SAPS side, they're saying the recommendations are of poor quality. So whether that's a SAPS claim to get out of implementing them or not, I don't know, could be. But I'd like to know how many recommendations there have been, say, in the last year, and how many of them the SAPS are actually implementing. Because, of course, the SAPS have got to the stage that they were ignoring about 80 to 90% of the ICD recommendations. We can't have a repetition of that situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Carabon. Honourable Bailey.
Thanks very much, Chair. It's difficult to actually think where to start and where to stop. But I'm going to start small for now, and then as we progress through the presentations. The one term that comes to mind for me in having looked at the presentation to come and other reports is what one might call systemic stagnation. And the risk of that is of settling into an inertia and kind of accepting that, well, things are bad and we just kind of live with it. So I'd be interested to know from the director, just thinking from a strategic change management perspective, there's a principle called the Pareto principle, the idea that, you know, 80% of desired results come from 20% of activities. And so if you want to observe remarkable change and marked change, it's about expanding on those minority of activities that give you real value add and that yield sort of leverage results. So I understand there are the strategic priorities, can we get some just clarity and elaboration on, in terms of those priorities, is it clear that it's not just a wish list? Is there an idea of it's about 1, 2, 3 in this time frame and it must yield results to this point? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mula, sorry.
Mine is one. Can they explain to me what does they say when they say the IP does not comply with the Occupational Health and Safety Act? Thank you.
Honourable Member, Honourable Molabachi.
Thank you, Chairperson. The transition from ICD to IPID. My second question is on the full complement status instead of satellite. What is this? Is this a form of a police station or what is the friendship?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question on the staff complement. My understanding is that usually when you do strategic planning and so on, it is never said on condition. Means the mandate stays as it is, whether you have a staff of 31 or 393, and whether it must be 500 when the staff complement is perfect. The mandate states that what difference does it make now in terms of what you are supposed to be doing? Because when you come next time, you are not going to say, we simply, when we check your performance, you are not going to tell us we are 31. You are simply going to check, oh, this is what our effort must do. And my understanding is that what we do here is oversight, and we must know what you can do and what you can't do, and it's our job to help, not to interrupt. What difference does it make? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I saw other hands, but let's first give the executive director an opportunity. There's a lot of questions. Over to you, sir.
Question from Honorable Paula Bonnet. The notion that the common assault investigation will be dropped is untrue. It's not going to happen. In fact, we will intensify that because it's indeed those aspects related to common assault which goes directly to the type of society we want to build. One where people can feel safe in the custody of police or in engagement with the police. And it starts with things which might be regarded as minor, as assault, and it works its way up to more serious issues. So definitely we will continue and we'll intensify the investigation of common assault. It's an integral part of what we do. There's no one else to do it. We are mandated to do it, and we will do it. The satellite is George. I just asked for input from my other colleagues who will have more detailed information, and then I just revert back to the question that was put to me.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members. In George, we have managed to get an old barracks that was offered to us by SAPS that we are using currently as our satellite office. The process of acquiring our own accommodation has been delayed by a number of things. The tender was advertised. However, when we were the process was supposed to be finalized, DPW informed us that the place is no longer available for ITID and the process has to be started all over again. The tender will be advertised again. But currently we've got the staff members there in George that are working in that temporary arrangement that we are having there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Again, on the Chairperson, on the issue of recommendations, just a change from the previous occasion when the IPED reported here, the acknowledgement of responses on recommendations was at 15%. It is now at 100%. But that's the only good news that's there. In terms of responses to recommendations, we are still receiving a very low response from SAPS. We've engaged with SAPS, with the National Commissioner, and we've engaged with the Secretariat on numerous occasions to deal with this issue. On occasion, SAPS has mentioned to us that there's some discrepancies between the figures and the cases. We have then resolved that on every reportage of recommendations and responses, they should include case numbers in addition to the stats. So in that way, there will be no possibility of claiming any disputes. We have noticed an improvement in their reportage and action taken as a result of recommendations and reverting to us on the outcomes of disciplinary processes. On the question of systemic stagnation, the document I referred to in terms of the strategic expansion and how we would deal with service delivery improvement is precisely the document that says everything anti-systemic stagnation. So it's in that light that I wanted to start with that first. So any comment of systemic stagnation would be an incorrect one. You would also notice the responsiveness of IPED in dealing with especially high profile cases. But in relation to that, in giving effect to us optimizing our capabilities, even with the small resources. We finalized our skill development plan, which deals with the in-depth training of investigators for more complex investigations, and some of this training has taken place in the past financial year also. There has also been some expansion, and there has been some additional recruitment. If I can just couple this response with the response question from the chairperson relating to capacity under expenditure, is that on the 3rd of March this year, advertisements went out for the senior positions. They are in the process of being finalized. In the first round of advertisements, we are unable to attract the best possible people. We then had to go advertise again. Now, that was a key element causing the underspending. We've worked out, I don't know the figures off the top of my head, my CFO would deal with it, but our underspending is has been much reduced, even without the senior management having been appointed yet. We have a slightly bigger budget, more rands have been spent, and we've also underspent in this last financial year at a less figure than the previous years. So there is an improvement. We have worked out that with the appointment of the senior managements only, it would bring up expenditure levels to in excess of 95% on that factor alone. The issue relating to health and safety capacity, we don't have capacity, we don't have any institutionalized capacity, we haven't appointed. There isn't a post for someone to be responsible for health and safety. We'd have to deal with that when we finalize and review, as I mentioned earlier, in reorganizing the structure. But the issue relating to what's the full complement is what we've worked out is the minimum necessary to fulfill our mandate in all corners of the country. Within our mandate, we have deadlines in which there has to be turnaround time. We are unable to achieve those targets of turnaround time with the present capacity that we have. And hence, there was a need to develop a strategy and an idea of what our goal is, so that we are then able to reach our goal and chart a route to it. Chairperson, I'm not sure which ones I've left out with you. If I can just cover the issue relating to the National Development Plan. One of the key issues is professionalizing of the police. We've already started engaging, and the National Coordinating Committee for Municipal Police and SEPs in indicating some of our ideas of how that can be achieved. In fact, in this process, we see ourselves on the same side, on a different side of the same pyramid in relating to the security of the country. And our view is that the more disciplined the police service is and the more professionalized it is, the more safer the country is. And part of our work is ensuring that we root out undisciplined, criminal, and unprofessional police from within the service. We've established our consultative forum in terms of the Act. I think it's Section 15. We are waiting only for a date from the Secretariat, and the Secretariat has to chair the first consultative forum. We have submitted dates. Dates have been changed due to the election process and the change of administration. But we will deal with issues of professionalizing and issues of demilitarizing the police. We've also got views on what that means, and our views that it should not be confined to the issue purely of rank. That one should look at it in various other ways, and one should concentrate on what the objective conditions are on the ground. We shouldn't be involved in a process merely for the sake of it. In terms of professionalizing, there's an aspect relating to our mandate in the Act that deals with assaults and brutality of police on people in the course of their duty, which seems to suggest that if they are off duty and they behave in a way that is incongruent with the status of the badge and the uniform, that we don't have a mandate on that. Now, we would like to engage with SAPS further to dispel that interpretation of it, because we believe that in the process of professionalizing, the badge, the status of a police officer is there whether on or off duty. In addition to that, we are proposing, and we have proposed already to General Haldanes of the SAPS, the notion of a professional police officer's body, very much like you'd have a nurse's or medical practitioner's body, which would, we believe, if you are professionalizing police, it becomes a profession. If there's a profession, there should be a professional body which deals with ethical, the type of ethical behavior you desire. So those are one of the issues which we have started engaging in SAPS. Chairperson, if you could just remind me of any question I might have omitted.
We will take the second round. I think that member there at the back.
Yeah.
Then, Honourable, I just wanted from the side is unhappy if I don't recognize. Honourable Malabati, I'm honouring your request.
Yes,
Honourable
Twala.
Honourable Twala, Honourable Kola Barnard, and just then from my side, the Secretary, you've indicated the question of the, because we're meeting with the Secretary on Tuesday, the question of the consultative forum. So you say since 1 April 2012 there was no meeting of that institution. It's not your baby, it's because of the Act. I just want to have confirmation.
Yes, Chairperson, the consultative forum has not had its first sitting. And the first sitting requires the secretary to be available to chair. And then thereafter, it then alternates between the executive director and the secretary. So as a result of the secretary not being available, we could not sit on the 15th of April.
Honourable Twala.
Thank you, Chairperson. Seated here and having listened to Mr. McBride, I'm a bit perturbed. Honourable Chairperson, there doesn't seem to be a clear plan that talks into strategy, that talks into how best we would want to execute our task as a unit. I would want him to perhaps begin to give us more meat strategy over a longish term, and over and above that sense, or in terms of strategic plans, they need to begin to talk to us in relation to the budget that is being proposed. We have gone through the minutes of the previous, that is the fourth parliament, and the issues they raised vis-à-vis their concerns. Sitting here, I'm basically hearing almost a repeat of the explanation that's given in the previous committee. Just to conclude, there's the question of unrealistic expectations by the general public and other institutions. I think that is a very, very demoralizing point of departure. eaten admissions that the task is kind of insurmountable from a person sitting from the outside and watching. Naturally, we will have expectations, and it's incumbent upon the directorate to assist us to realize such expectations. And one will therefore urge that the directorate endeavors as best as possible to meet its mandate and such expectations. Thank you, Chair.
A short while ago, I asked a question about the common assault issue, and the answer was the notion that common assault will be dropped is untrue completely. And yet, it's very bizarre, because in the IPED NASH Annual Performance Plan 2014-15, the message from the executive director, and I quote directly, "On the investigative front, we found that just about 60% of our cases were common assaults, which can range from a push to a slap. Our investigators were kept quite busy with these less serious cases. We intend to approach the legislature to amend our legislation so we can focus on the more serious offences that could have an impact on police criminality." And yet, earlier on, he said that was nonsense. Now, I need some sort of straight answer. Is it nonsense? These are his words in this document, and yet he says his own words are untrue. I need some clarification, please.
Norman Bailey. Thanks, Chair. I'd just like to follow up on the issue of the satellite office in George. My understanding, and I'm open to correction if I'm operating on out-of-date information, but it's from what I last heard about 2-3 days ago, is that the Provincial Ministry of Community Safety and the Western Cape Government did make an offer to assist with facilitating the municipal premises in George for the location of an IPA satellite office. And the last feedback I had when I checked in was that that offer hadn't been responded to or taken up. So could I just get some clarity on that, because it really does not make sense that we can be talking about upgrading or amending the status of satellite offices to a full complement status when there's still a structural vacuum in one province, and where there has been an offer of a helping hand from the provincial government to finalise that, then it must be taken up. Thank you.
Right. Any other questions from members? I'm going to take one, and then we're going to give the executive director an opportunity to respond, and then we're going to go to program one. Two, three. Okay. Honourable Advance, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would like to know, because there is a transformation here from complaints directorate to investigative directorate, who is handling this transformation? Is it done internally or it's undersourced? Secondly, is there no overlapping of the duties performed by this directorate and the police? Why I'm saying this is the directorate is not very well known, and the assault in fact, I have one example of an assault where my cousin was nearly killed in the police station by the police. And were requested to find out where must the assaulted person report the case. And he had to report the case to the police station where he was assaulted. Nothing much is known about the investigative unit. And perhaps it's due to capacity, but over and above that, it's a matter of not being known in other areas. They're talking about two areas where there are offices, but there is a place like Messina, far away from Pretoria, or what are the plans to reach out to the people so that the assaulted people do not go to the same people who assaulted them to report?
Thank you very much. So we finish with this section. Members, if there's anything again that you want to ask, we'll do it in the sections and at the end as well. Executive Director, over to you.
Honourable Paula Barnett is quite correct. That was a statement then during March. After deliberations, we realized that is an incorrect approach. And the position now is that, as I said earlier, in response to your question, Honourable Paula Barnett, we will not approach the legislature to amend on that specific issue relating to assault. Assault is firmly within our mandate, and we'd like to make apologies for the discrepancy in regards to that. That was the position then within the department. Subsequently, we've had deliberations and realized it's not tenable to come with that proposal to Parliament. On the issue of the strategy, Honourable Twala was speaking about the perception that he does not see a strategy and requires meat, more meat on it. The document I was talking to earlier, which is the document relates to some of the other comments, and the comment with the Honourable Member relating to access and knowledge about IPED and about the Directorate's work, is contained in this document which I was referring to earlier, which I'll make available to the Chairperson. This document talks directly to all the issues we've raised on reach, on coverage, and on access to IPED. So that's what this, the purpose of this document, because that is indeed an issue. Honourable Member asked, is the translation, the transformation from ICT to IPED completed? The answer is no. There are key elements in terms of the Act which require capacitation institutionally. We cover them later in our presentation. These have not been implemented yet. These units have not been established yet. I'll give you, for example, a unit that deals with systemic corruption within the SAPS. And as it can be expected, some of our investigations are quite dangerous. Yet we do not have a protective unit, a protection unit. We don't have that. We're in the process of establishing it. Our structure has only been approved 2 weeks ago. Within the framework of the budget we are given for this financial year we are in, we've had to reorganize and reprioritize to stay within the budget to enable us to have some capacity of protection, some capacity in terms of the imperatives of the Act to be able to do preliminary vetting and screening. That we didn't have, we are now putting it in place. We will require additional units which the Act prescribes we should have. We should have the capacity to carry out certain tasks. So we are very mindful of that, and hence we have to sacrifice some posts in the investigations in order for us to have some capacity to look after ourselves when we have some pushback from the investigations that we conduct. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Sopo.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the issue of complainants having to report to the police, the IPID Act specifically, Section 29 of the Act, requires the police to report any matters referred to in Section 28, which includes the assaults, to the IPID, to the IPID, and their failure to do so is an offence. So, because of the fact that, as you've indicated, that the IPID is a small organization and does not have reach everywhere. That is why the legislator saw it fit that it places an obligation on the police that once immediately there is a report that is made at the police station about an assault by a police officer or any offense by a police officer as stated in Section 28, they must immediately report to IPID so that IPID can be able to investigate.
Honourable Member, I'll be taking you through the estimates of national expenditure for Vault 23, the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. In terms of the E&E that was prepared, the E&E sets out the planned expenditure as well as the performance with relating to our key performance areas at the time of tabling the budget. It's aligned to the National Development Plan, which highlights the need to ensure that all people in South Africa live safely in a corrupt-free society with an independent and fair criminal justice system. This plan also states that inspiring public confidence in the criminal justice system is the most effective deterrent to criminality. Thus, the work of the IPID is aligned with this plan through its focus on ensuring that the police service is trusted by the community, thus contributing towards a capable state. It's also aligned to the 12 outcomes of government, particularly outcome 3, that all people in South Africa are and feel safe, as well as outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-orientated public service with regards to our service delivery quality and as regards to the accessibility of our offices to the people of the state, as well as improving business processes, systems with regards to decisions, as well as accountability. It highlights your performance, personnel, and finances per program in respect of the impact that they have on the program's plans. It's also currently aligned to the approved budget program structure of the IPID, which was highlighted previously by the executive director, currently consists of 4 budget programs. In terms of historical allocations, the budget of the IPID has grown from 128.4 million in 2010-11 to 217 million in 2013-14, which was at an average growth rate of 19.1%, most of the growth occurring within the first year of implementation of the IPID Act, which was 2012-13. In terms of the current budget allocations which have been allocated in terms of the E&E, from 14-15 to 16-17, we have a budget growing from 234.7 million, which is an 8.16% growth from 13-14, and that budget would grow to 262.3 million at an average growth rate over this intake period of 6.5%. In terms of the E&E contribution to government outcomes and key priorities, the IPID's overarching goal is to contribute towards ensuring a police service that is trusted by the community and operates in line with the spirit of the Constitution. And this is achieved by our alignment of our work to ensure that people in South Africa are safe. It also is contributed by IPID's combating against corruption within the justice, crime prevention, and security cluster, as well as its alignment, as I've highlighted earlier, to the items highlighted in the National Development Plan when it comes to fighting against crime. In terms of the spending focus for the next 3 years, the E&E allocated to IPID is aimed at achieving the performance targets. The directorate has realigned its budget with its plans to increase the number of investigators over the medium term. The spending focus will continue to be on enhancing the directorate's investigative capacity to conduct successful and quality investigations within the targeted periods that are outlined in our annual performance plan. The directorate plans to appoint additional 44 personnel over the medium term, mainly investigators, thus increasing the overall establishment from 349 posts to 393 posts in 2016-17. That's in terms of the current baseline that has been allocated towards this department. In terms of skills development, there'll be an increased focus on improving the skills of investigators to enable them to execute the extended mandate in terms of Section 28 of the IPED Act. And I have highlighted earlier in terms of budget growth over the intake period, we saw a 19.1% budget growth from 2010-11, and going forward, the budget would grow at an average rate of 6.5%, mainly due to your annual salary adjustments that are projected in the baseline. In terms of budget allocations per program, most of our budget allocations are afforded to our core program, which is investigation and information management. Thus, the spending focus would be on enhancing the directorate's investigative capacity. Due to the labor-intensive nature of the investigations, bulk of the spending will be on Program 2, Investigation and Information Management. There's also been a realignment of the budget through reprioritization of funds from our administration program to our core program, Program 2, in order to support the need to focus on our core mandate. If we go to the next slide, in terms of the 14-15 allocation, 64% of our budget allocation for 14-15 is prioritized to investigation and information management, followed by our administration program at 31%, then our legal services program at 3%, and our compliance monitoring and stakeholder management program at 2% of the budget allocation for 14-15. Per economic classification, that slide then highlights the funding that is per program and per economic classification, with most of our budget allocations being under Program 2, particularly compensation of employees due to the labor-intensive nature of the work that is conducted by IPID. If we look at budget allocations per program, starting with Program 1, administration, whose purpose is to provide for the overall management of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, as well as the support services, including the strategic support of the directorate. The spending focus in this program would be on capacitating the department's administrative support services and enhancing its internal control environment to ensure good governance that the directorate delivers on the mandate. The bulk of the expenditure will go to internal controls, as well as strengthening of security and the implementation and maintenance of the directorate's ICT system. As you can see, there's been a decline in the overall budget of this program due to the reprioritization of funds from Program 1 to Program 2, our core program, to support the plans for increased focus on extending our investigative capacity. If we move to Program 2, Investigation and Information Management, the purpose of this program is to coordinate and facilitate the Independent Police Investigative Directorate's processes and develop policy and strategic frameworks that guide and report on investigations. The spending focus over the medium term will be on investigating matters as outlined in Section 28 of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act in order to contribute towards making sure that people in South Africa are and feel safe. A bulk of this appropriation will be to the investigation sub-program, investigation services sub-program, which houses our provincial offices, which are the core of our operations. If you look at the budget allocations for this program as compared to 13-14, you can then thus see the increase of 24% in this budget, which was also due to the reprioritization of funds to our core program. In terms of Program 3, Legal Services, the main purpose of this program is to manage and facilitate the provision of investigation advisory services and provide legal and litigation advisory services. The spending focus over the medium term will be on the provision of sound legal advice and guidance to ensure that cases forwarded for prosecution comply with legal requirements. There will also be, as you can see, there's also been an increase here of 28%, which is expected to provide for the increase in demand for investigation advisory services due to the projected increase in the number of investigations to be conducted by our investigation and information management program over the medium term. The next program is Program 4, which is compliance monitoring and stakeholder management. The main purpose of this program is to safeguard the principles of cooperative governance and stakeholder management. In terms of this program, the spending focus over the medium term will be on safeguarding the principles of cooperative governance, which include monitoring the directorate's compliance with reporting obligations, as well as the quality of recommendations referred to the police service, the National Prosecuting Authority, as well as other key stakeholders. It will also be responsible for ensuring public awareness of the directorate's mandate and functions through community awareness programs. And as you can see, this is one our new program, which has also seen the reprioritization of funds from our core program too, to create a specialized attention towards the key priorities that this program exists to serve. In terms of unfunded mandates, which are currently not funded in the E&E for 13-14, 14-15, is the integrity management unit, which is outlined in section 22.3 of the IPID Act. The investigation information processing unit, which would assist with implementing section 9D of the IPID Act. The need for a national specialized investigation team, protection unit. The need for specialized training for investigators on complex investigations. The need for systemic corruption investigation capacity funding. Funding for specialized investigative equipment, as well as the expansion strategy that the executive director introduced when he gave the introduction to the background of the organization. So these are the mandates that are currently not funded in the E&E. But the previous slides that I have taken you through have highlighted the activities that are currently funded and will be implemented in line with the E&E that has been afforded to ourselves. That then brings me to the end of the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Executive Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wish to acknowledge a number of typing errors. As you'd have seen, slide number 34 should have been slide 21. Slide 40 is a duplication of slide 39. Slide 31 to 34, the numbering of the years should read 2014, 15, 2015, 16, 2016, and 17. And then slide 44, the spelling of strategic is not correct. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, colleagues. We're going to take questions on the financials. Two questions from my side, and then we'll start from Mr. Markey. The one thing I just want to ask the CFO, the question of the unfunded mandates. I get the impression, if I read through the E&E, they're not there. Is it part of the strategic document that was produced after the E&E process? I just want to get clarification on that, because that influences the status. Then, just one issue the AG raised with us, and just to get assurance for the committee, we also raised it with the police. There was indication by the AG about the processes to ensure that the daily processing of the correctness of the financial statements was a problem in terms of capacity and expertise. Are we now have the necessary, you know, in-house capability to deal with it? It's very important for us as a committee. We don't want to come in a situation when the annual report comes down, it's an issue. So we just want to have assurance that the financial management, the financial statements, the corrections, the rules, those issues are under
Mr. Morgan. Mr. President, my question was exactly on unfunded mandate. As I said earlier on, that when you come here, you put a mandate according to an act of parliament, and you can't say you put 31 staff or 393, you should have what what does that mean? Unfunded, it means you must do that according to the law and you don't have money to do it. So what do you do? That is exactly what I asked earlier.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, some of my questions are taken. What are the specialized investigation equipment required by the Directorate and investigators? What are they?
Are you fine? Honourable Colabano?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like an explanation for what looks like fiscal dumping, specifically in the fourth quarter where the IPID underspent on goods and services in the third quarter and then spent on projection in the fourth quarter. So could we have an explanation in that regard? And also the expenditure recorded for payments of capital assets, that also raises concern for fiscal dumping as they underspent significantly in the third quarter and then overspent significantly in the fourth quarter. Please, we need answers in this regard.
Honourable Bailey, are you fine? Right, we'll take those. Thank you, Executive Director.
Chairperson, I'll deal with the first part and the rest of the team will deal with the subsequent part. On the unfunded mandates, this is work that goes on. It happens. Honourable Market, this work goes on even though we don't have capacity, which means how do we do it? We stay in late after normal working hours till very late to get that done. And we do it even if it doesn't fall under our job description. So we make it get done. And that's how it happens.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question regarding the concern on that raised by the AG on the readiness of departments to produce accurate, complete financial statements, I would say that with regards to the IPID, there's been extensive work, particularly in the finance unit, to capacitate the team that works on those financials. It currently goes through multiple processes of review internally, as well as assurance from the internal audit unit within the department itself, and we are continuously working on further improving those processes so that we don't fall subject to systemic stagnation. So we are, I think at this stage, when it comes to the accuracy, completeness of financial statements, we're at an acceptable level of capacity. The issue of the quarterly expenditure trend, there is still a concern over the nature or the trends of quarterly expenditure, particularly for 13-14. There were numerous delays in filling some of the key positions in order to implement fully or move to a process of implementing fully the transition from ICD to IPID. And as a result, in your late appointment of key positions, you find that the processes then also in terms of goods and services expenditure, which is budgeted to support those offices, it would only kick in your later quarters of the financial year. But it is something that the entity is working on in terms of improving. We have moving very steadily with regards to our recruitment drive to make sure that we are fully capacitated so that the expenditure is in line with the plans that we set forth at the beginning of the financial period. I would also offer to my members to assist with the other question.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Chairperson asked the question, why our expansion strategy is not funded on an E&E? And the question was it developed after an E&E was submitted or approved or what? The question is yes. This expansion strategy was developed in April this year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, the specialized equipment we are referring to, it's equipment that will help us in this specialized investigation, especially your corruption, systemic corruption cases, where you're doing entrapments and surveillance and so forth. So these are specialized kind of equipment that we're looking at procuring. So too, with regard to specialized training, it refers also to that, because issues of systemic corruption is something that is new within the department. So you need to get people appropriately equipped in terms of training in specialized, for instance, your cyber investigations, computer, you know, this technical, very technical kind of investigation that we embark on, lifestyle audits and those kind of things, where you find that people, police live beyond their means and so forth. So these are the kind of training that we're looking at, that were not your normal kind of training that we're offering within the department. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Kona Barnard, Honourable Mubele, Honourable Kwala.
Before we take another, perhaps I could have the answer to my second question about the payments for capital assets raising concern for fiscal dumping. I do understand the hiring, late hiring of staff, but it was the second part of the question that just didn't seem to be addressed before we move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The expenditure on capital assets is also as a direct result of the hiring of staff. Most of the budget that was afforded for capital assets in 13-14 was particularly for the positions that needed to be filled. So as a result of the late filling of the positions, there was thus procurement at a later stage. Furniture was delivered, most of it third quarter, fourth quarter, which is why you would see the expenditure in those quarters also. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My question is in relation to the transfers and subsidies to what's termed departmental agencies and households. And if I recall correctly, that allocation is increasing from the previous financial year. I may be incorrect, but I seem to recall that. Can we just get some elaboration, please, on what that entails? Because cash transfers are an area that is ripe for misabuse.
Honourable Chair, I just want to remind the director. I posed a question in relation to unrealistic expectations, and the kind of did not respond to that.
Thank you, Chair. One other thing that always worried the committee was loss of gay personnel. What is the situation with your retention policy? Thanks, Chair.
Can I just also add in one other question, maybe for the executive director and the CFO? The AG indicated to us that there was only two meetings of the audit committee. Of course, you only can now, there was active people throughout. How do you see also the role of the audit committee? I don't know if they've been reconstituted, but maybe they are also giving them this assurance. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. On the issue of unrealistic expectations, Honourable Member, we're referring to expectations generally in the public. If you build houses, people want roads, you build roads, they want lights. If you have lights, they want schools, and so on. And so the expectations continue, and government has a tiny business. The same applies to us in the directorate, where on occasion people expect us to deal with aspects that are not part of our mandate. And sometimes insist on us dealing with it. Maybe because of a misunderstanding or unrealistic expectation, or because they have trust in us. And then when we refer to the relevant authority, there's sometimes frustration experienced. And it's in that context. On the committees, Chairperson, we've established all our committees, including the audit committee, and in this financial year, they've already sat a number of times, different committees.
Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding the issue of loss of key personnel, at the department, we have identified the problem that most of our positions, compared to other departments, are at lower level, especially our investigators. You find that our investigators are attracted by the institutions like public protector or a military ombudsman, and so on. So this expansion strategy is also looking at that, where we are, where we want to stretch the level between level 7 and level 8, where, so that our investigators will have a growth opportunity within the band of investigator, and then they will not, in that way, they will not be attracted for maybe a little amount of increment to go elsewhere. They will remain with us. Also, we are looking at total structure of IPID, because we've identified that even with our internal audit unit, our ICT unit, and so on, all those, we are experiencing high staff turnover. So we're looking at the total structure so that we can do the proper proposal to our executive director, so for him to see how we can move forward and retain our staff. But coming back to the issue of retention policy, the policy has been is at the draft stage. Currently, it's at a chamber level. There are delays at that level because it has to be negotiated, and they go back on task teams and so on, looking at the policy and so on. But internally now, we are looking at our levels, because we feel that it's another reason why we are losing key personnel. Also, the environment in which we are operating in, we're looking at it, if there are barriers that are preventing maybe people from doing certain things, and they find it difficult to remain with us. So we want to improve on those as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. You know,
you can go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to address the question on the transfers and subsidies budget. This is the budget that is set aside for the SASITA transfer to the Safety and Security Sector Education and Training Authority with regards to the skills development levy that is transferred to them to assist with training within the sector. So that is why you would see a proportional growth of that in line with the need to capacitate our core business. It also is calculated as a portion proportionate to your growth in personnel. So you would also expect that budget to grow as you expect a growth in your, especially in our investigative capacity within our region. Thank you.
Well, I will appoint you now.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we sit in this committee. I think the purpose why we interface with the structures is to enable them to execute their mandate effectively and efficiently. Now, there appears to me to be some kind of self-regulation in terms of that which they ought to request for in relation to the process they require to fulfill their mandate. I would advise that rather let them do a thorough job. Look, you've got unfunded mandates and that. I don't think it is poignant on their part to come with such to us. I would rather prefer that, you know, they cost all those things, so that when we do decide, it's a decision based on that which will empower them to be able to execute their mandate. They shouldn't be afraid. You know, the investment you put in will reflect itself in the output. It's natural. So let's not meander, Comrade McBride, in relation to your requests. Rather, let's deal with the number as you present it and see if it's justifiable. Let me move on. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. the reality is those unfunded mandates, I mean, they won't be handled during the adjustments unless this committee feels very strongly and we've got the power now to do it. And I mean, the next cycle will start, you know, again in a few months' time. So, I mean, I think we must also be realistic. It won't be possible. So it's again the question of reprioritization. And but we will talk to those issues when we see the new plan. Other questions on the financials before we move on to the next presentation? No more for the budget.
Yeah, the investigation is the core of program 2, but the expenditure within this program is lower than the projected spending at the end of the fourth quarter. Why is this? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's very correct to say that this is our core program, and it was the program whose expenditure percentage as compared to the other programs was particularly low at the end of the first quarter. It was also one of the programs that experienced the highest level of key vacancies for a very extended period, this being our chief directors for each of the provincial regions. Those positions were vacant, unfortunately, for the entire financial year, and there was specific budget or funds that were appropriated to capacitate those positions once filled. And as a result of that, that led then to the unwanted expenditure within our core, which was sitting at 84.4% at the end of the first quarter, particularly due to the vacancies that were unfortunately experienced within that program.
Right, I think we'll move on to the next program, but if there's questions, at the end, members are welcome. Okay. Let's move on to the next program.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am presenting the annual performance plan for Program 1. The purpose of Program 1 is to provide overall management of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate and support services, including strategic support to the directorate. The program consists of the following programs: development, departmental management. Under departmental management, we've got executive support and corporate governance. We also have corporate services. Under corporate services, we've got five sub-components: human resource management and development services, security management, information communication technology, communication and marketing, auxiliary services, and finance services. We also have internal audit and office accommodation. I will move straight to our strategic objectives for MTEF period. Our output is public awareness campaigns, an indicator that we have put there. We want to achieve a number of media statements that will be released on annually. We want to release formal media statements, 40 for the period 2014-15, and 2015-16, and 2016-17. A number of responses to media queries that will be released on annual basis. In 2014-15, we will release 120 responses. 2015-16, we will release 150 media responses. In 2016-17, we will release 180 media responses. Another output is a performance management system. An indicator there is the number of performance monitoring and evaluation reports submitted to ensure attainment of strategic objectives. In 2014-15, we will release 13 reports. In 2015-16, we will release 13. In 2016-17, we will release 13. Another indicator is number of financial and strategic reports submitted within the prescribed dates for reporting. We will release 22 reports on each financial year throughout MTEF period. Another output is capacity building, human resource management plan. We intend to ensure that the vacancy rate is kept below 10% throughout MTEF period. Also, we want to ensure that we employ females at senior management level. We want to achieve 50% throughout MTEF period. We also intend to ensure that we achieve 2% of staff staff complement with people living with disabilities throughout MTEF period. The policy that the honourable member asked me about, retention policy, we have put it here on our annual performance plan. We want to make sure that this year it is finalised and approved. Another output is ICT plan and governance framework. An indicator, we've got two indicators there. One indicator is development of ICT plan and production of ICT governance quarterly report. In 2014-15, we will do learn, refresh and upgrade. We've already started at our national office. In 2015-16, we would do the ICT continuity plan and make sure that it is implemented. In 2016-17, we will do electronic document management system and make sure that it is implemented throughout the department. Another output is realignment of organizational functions and structures. Like the executive director indicated that we, from time to time, we're going to look at our structure in order to ensure that it is reviewed and aligned to ensure that we implement our act effectively. So on each financial year, we will sit as the directorate and look at our structure to check if it is still addressing the needs of the IPID once a year throughout MTEF period. We will also conduct environmental assessment studies, one per province and one at national office. This is an environmental scanning to ensure how is our workforce doing. We will also analyze the sick leave patterns, checking the trends, also looking at the impact of HIV and AIDS within the organization. Also do the total wellness analysis, and which will include weight management and other issues that are related to wellness. So it will be a total research per province, checking and comparing and checking what are the problem areas in various provinces and what are the causes, and that will inform the management to be proactive. And ensure that whatever risk areas that are identified are mitigated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We will take questions. Also questions first on my side. Then we will take I don't see it in the program presentation, but maybe, same with the police, if we maybe can get information during next week, due to the fact that most finalised are approved, there was indication by the AG there's a whole list of old policies, still ICT policies that has been transformed to IT policies. If we can just get an implementation plan, you know, when those policies will be implemented in terms of assurance. And then also the question of the IT governance framework of disaster recovery plan. Now, according to the agent, that's still in the whole plan, I don't know whether it is or not, but that we as a committee can also just get an implementation plan, time plan, you know, that it's been dealt with. That would also be appreciated. Okay, Ms. Kalabana.
Thank you.
Look, there has been an issue that we raised previously about lots of internal promotions, and that then landing basically not assisting in the problem of the mass vacancy rates. Is that still an issue? Is it something we can stop asking questions about? How have you dealt with it? And there was also a move at one stage to try and centralize everything, taking basically responsibilities away from the provincial head offices in terms of most of the functions. So what is the current situation? You know, people are paid to be heads in provinces of many entities, and they need to earn their money. Otherwise, shut down the head offices, fire them all, and just give it all to your executive director. Why pay them? So what is the situation now? Please just explain. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the things that the AG has identified is the lack of compliance with public service regulation. What is the situation as of now? The percentage, what is the percentage of female senior managers as of now? And the percentage of people with disability. Now, my next question is, the strategic objective for feedback reports on the outcome of investigation that was to be submitted within 30 days. This was removed from the 2014-2015 APT. Why is it? Thanks, Chair.
Other questions? Yeah, I think there's just one outstanding question from Mr. Tsonga. I think it's under program one as well. The question of publicity awareness. I think Mr. Tsonga, I haven't heard from Mr. Domini yet. We can just have the explanation in terms of your public awareness program.
Thank you, Chair. Well, we still do community awareness. We still have targets that we've set for our provincial offices, which are required to go out and publicize the work of the IP. We also partner with other departments such as GCIS, Department of Justice. We are looking also at partnering even with the police, because then in that way we can respond in terms of our mandate, but also ensure that they account to the community in terms of the work that they should be doing. But we do have an extensive campaign which we are looking at expanding going forward.
So the follow-up, Mr. Martin. You can take the follow-up and then we'll have responses to the other questions.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's a question on internal promotions. It's a question that I wrote when there was data other implementation. Just for my understanding, because it is said that 3 out of 4 chief directors are acting, what is wrong with internal promotions? You can imagine if I act personally, if I act for so many months, and then out of a sudden I shift for somebody else with the experience that I have. I wrote it because it seems to be a problem that I don't understand. What's wrong with internal promotions or not promotions as such? Even if you interview the people that were acting, it's not a promotion anyway. They're in a better position to can get the job. But in any way, if 3 out of 4 chief directors are acting, then what is wrong with that anyway? Thank you.
Mr. Mark, I think we must ask that for the fourth parliament's members to answer that. Honourable Mula, but I think then we must come back to the responses. Yes, Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I want to know, have you appointed the provincial heads in all the provinces? And another question is that I see here that you said you want to implement 50-50. I want to know what is the state of the women in higher positions in the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've dealt with a number of issues. In relation to the first question by Honourable Kola Bonner, in line with Section 10 dealing with delegations of the Act, we have conducted a number of work sessions in preparation for delegations which must be approved by the Minister, both financial and human resource related delegations. So the process of cascading responsibility to provincial heads is underway, and it would be completed within this financial year. In relation to the fact is that all the chief director positions, all 11 of them, they are acting people there. No one hasn't been appointed. And as I mentioned in my initial remarks, on my second day of appointment, the advertisements went out to fill those posts. Those posts are in the final stages of being filled, and advertisements have gone out on two occasions. Responses have been received. Some internal people, according to the update I've received, have applied, and there is, depending on the outcome of the process, some people might be appointed in a way you mentioned, the promotional posts. But at the moment, the process is underway, and they have not been appointed yet. It's in the final stages of appointment.
Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding the first question of the policies that are not reviewed, most of our policies have been reviewed. They are at draft stage, and they are just at the stage where they are being consulted, and they will be finalized soon, most of our policies. ICT governance framework, as it is prescribed by the DPSA, it is being implemented by IPID. During 2013-14 financial year, we had planned to develop the internal governance, ICT governance framework, which is aligned to the DPSA one, and get it approved. It was done. During 2014-15, we were looking at phase two, which is looking at upgrade of our network, and so on, of which we are already started with this. We have already done the issues of governance, like the governance structure, ICT governance committee. We are happy that is we've done it, as well as the policies for ICT, regulating ICT. Even though they are at draft stage, but they've been developed and. We are working at ICT governance framework as it is prescribed, and we are moving according to phases per financial year, as it indicated on our APP. With regard to the disaster recovery plan, currently we've got the disaster recovery plan that is looking at only ICT systems. However, we are not happy with the current situation because our recovery site is within IPID somewhere where I cannot disclose at this meeting. But we're looking at having a site that is independent of IPID. We already have the draft plan that is looking strictly on our ICT recovery, the disaster recovery. However, we are working now at the broader business continuity plan that is looking at the total business of IPID. Should a disaster occur, business of IPID must be able to continue. We started with the process of obtaining a service provider through quotation base. However, that process did not go on because the prices were above 500,000, so we had to go on open tender. And we have finalized the bid specifications, and it's going to go on tender very soon. We've got the commitment to ensure that this financial year we will have the business continuity up and running for the department. Okay, the issue of internal promotions, I think the executive director has indicated that we, following government policies in terms of advertising the vacant positions, and even those that are acting in positions must apply and go through an interview process so that the process is objective and is in line with the recruitment policies within government. As the executive director has indicated, it's at final stages. We will be appointing very soon the provincial heads. The issue of centralizing of issues of activities at the national office, we have looked at it, and currently the HR delegations that are aimed at delegating some of functions from national office, from the executive director, to various levels, including the provincial heads, have been finalized, as well as finance delegations that looking at delegating some financial responsibility from executive director to various levels, including the provincial heads. Our delegations were done in two phases. We've got those responsibilities that are with the executive authority in terms of Public Service Act, as well as DPSA. So we started at that level where we are delegating from that level to executive director and from executive director to various levels. So we are looking at that issue of delegation. Compliance with public service regulations. You indicated the issue of female representation at senior level. I don't know if I got your question correct, where you said AG has indicated that we do not comply with public service regulations. But I'm going to address the issue of female representation at senior management level. During 2012-13, we were sitting at 40% female representation at senior management level. However, we lost two females, and then that number dropped. Actually, we lost three females. That number dropped to 36% during 2013-14 financial year. Again, with regard to people living with a disability, we lost one person, of which it affected our percentage. We were at 1.2%. Now we are sitting at 1% of people living with a disability. We have ensured that when we advertise all the senior management positions, it is marked with bold that the priority is given to women and people with disability, meaning that when we recruit and so on, we do look at women that are suitably qualified and who meet all the requirements, as well as people with disability. That's how we have looked at it. With regards to public awareness, like as Mr. Lamin has indicated, that function will be reported under stakeholder management because that function is a program for now. Thank you.
Right, is that that? Can we move on to the next program? Everybody agree? Right. Next program. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Members. I'll give a presentation on Program 2, Investigation and Information Management. The purpose of this program is to strengthen oversight role over the police service by conducting investigation within the powers granted by the IPID Act. It also makes a recommendation on investigation conducted and ensures efficiency in registration and investigation of cases. This program has three sub-programs: Investigation Management, which develops and maintains investigation systems and procedures, norms and standards and policies in line with the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act. It also has a sub-program information management, and this sub-program manages information and knowledge management services through the development and maintenance of case flow management system database and the analysis and compilation of fiscal information. It also conducts a trend analysis based on available data and makes recommendations to the SAPS. Investigation services. This sub-program manages and conducts investigation in line with IPID Act. This is where the provinces are. In terms of the strategic output for the program, a case management system, the system for registration, allocation, tracking, management, and reporting of investigation, generation of reliable fiscal information, and provision of general business intelligence. And the other output is completed investigation of cases in line with the provision of the IPID Act regulations and the Executive Director's guidelines, and recommendation reports to the SAPS regarding possible disciplinary steps and to the prosecuting authorities regarding possible criminal prosecution. I'll move on to the indicators in respect of each output. In the output case management system, we've got two indicators. Percentage of cases registered and allocated within 72 hours. And our target there is 98% in the current financial year, moving to 99 and 100% over the NTF period. A number of statistical reports generated and the number and type of cases investigated, recommendation made, and outcomes thereof. It's 18 reports over the NTF period. And then, with regard to completed investigations, we have a specific indicator in respect of each category of cases that you are supposed to investigate in terms of Section 28 of the IPID Act. The first one being percentage of investigations of death in custody completed within 90 days as per our regulations. Our target there is 65% of completed investigation within 90 days in the current financial year, which will move to 66 and 67% respectively over the MTF period. Percentage of investigations of death as a result of police action completed within 90 days. We also have similar percentage over the MTF period as the first one. Percentage of investigation of discharge of an official firearm by police officer completed within 90 days. In the current financial year, proposing a 55% completion within 90 days. And it will grow to 56 and 57% over the MTF period. Percentage of investigations of rape by a police officer completed within 90 days. In the current financial year, it will be 60%, and it will grow over the MTF period to 60 and 62% respectively. Percentage of rape while in police custody completed within 90 days. The percentage will be the same as the previous one over the MTF period. Slide 40, as we've indicated before, it's a duplication of slide 39. We move to slide 41. Percentage of investigation of torture completed within 90 days. It will be 50% of completed investigation within 90 days, which will grow to 51 and 52% over the MTF period. Percentage of assault completed within 90 days, it will also be the same as the torture cases over the MTF period. Percentage of investigation of corruption completed within 90 days, it is 55% in the current financial year and it will grow to 56 and 57% respectively over the MTF period. Percentage of investigation of other criminal and misconduct matters referred to the directorate in terms of Section 28.1H and 351B of the IPRD Act. It will be 55% in the current financial year and will grow 56% over the MTF period. And then the number of systemic corruption identified for possible investigation approval within a financial year, we're proposing 18 identified systemic corruption investigation over the MTF period. Percentage of approved systemic corruption investigation we're proposing 20% of these cases over the MTF period. And percentage by which backlog investigations are reduced annually, we're proposing 50% reduction over the MTF period. With regards to recommendations as an output, recommendation reporting as output, disciplinary recommendation reports referred to SAPS within 30 days of completion of relevant investigation. We're proposing 80% of the relevant completed cases in the 2014-15 financial year, and this will grow to 100% over the MTF period. Criminal recommendation reports referred to the NPA within 30 days of completion of relevant investigation. This will be 100% as a target of the relevant completed investigation over the MTF period. That is the presentation, Chairperson, for
thank you very much. We will take questions. We will have Mr. Marke, other things. Right, I will start and then we'll give Mr. Marke an opportunity. The questions I have is got to do, I don't know whether it falls under paragraph 4, but you can indicate. I think the AG also indicated the question again of performance information. And this committee does want to get, you know, clarity on that, that things are on track in terms of the spending and the program focus. The AG indicated to us that there is not a specific unit in place dedicated to the collection reporting of performance information. Now they say again there's no comprehensive system of reporting information in place, just to get your comments on that. And then they also indicate that problems with Flowcentric, they say it's not sufficient for the reporting of performance information. As a result, a manual system was used to collate and report performance information. They said there were some upgrades, but they're still assessing that. That's a very important matter. And maybe just to get an indication of, in terms of your spending plans, how do you see to deal with that? And give assurance to the committee that the performance information is on track. Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. I was just thinking to myself, so I'm thinking aloud now, that according to, I'm not sure whether it's section 28 or 29, they are related, as it was said earlier, where the police are obliged by law to report anything that is to do with a crime committed by them. I'm not sure whether if that is being adhered to, and if it is not, do you have any mechanisms that deals with such eventuality? Because I'm just thinking, or my colleague, not only my colleague, my drinking partner also does something, and I'm supposed to report immediately. It might have a problem. And that also brings me back to a forum that you said earlier on, some consultative forum, I don't know how it works, that never met for some time until now. I think maybe it comprises of subs, yourselves, or maybe even the secretariat. I don't know the components. Maybe in explaining or what are the functions of that and how is it structured, maybe it might answer this problem. I'm not very sure, but as I say, I was thinking aloud about it. And one last question. The percentages that you were giving here, where we are only going to do 20%, 50%, Why do you say that? Is it because of the days that you were given? If it's 90 days, then you can only do 50%. Or is it because of the reality that you have now of the staff that is supposed to be 500 and something, and you are 393, and you are afraid of giving figures that you know you can't reach. So you are actually saying we can't carry this mandate if and only if. So those are my two questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is that of the cases that have to be registered and allocated to an investigator within 48 hours. And then now it's changed to 72 hours. How can it be changed to 72 instead of they are saying 24 hours at least, or 48 hours instead of 72? Thank you, Chair.
For the other members, Honorable Mulabati.
Mine is on the vacancy rate. Your vacancy rate is 12.6% instead of below 10%. How do you hope to improve it?
Then the last question from my side, and then we'll take another round. Is the general question, and we also asked that the SAPs, to the National Commissioner, and we also will ask it to the Secretariat, and we want a frank response. Give us the true situation. What we are saying is that in terms of the National Development Plan, there must be a new police service committed to human rights conduct. We need the cooperation of all police stakeholders. Now, in the program investigations, are you getting the support of the police? Are they coming on board? If they are not coming on board, you must indicate that to the committee. I think the fourth Parliament's committee, and we've got two surviving members here today, indicated in a report that they went to the Eastern Cape on an oversight visit, and there was an indication from IPED that the police don't cooperate, you know. So we can also get an indication from the executive director, and you know, if there's a problem, please indicate that to us today, because then we're going to deal with that in our report, and we will take it up when we meet again with SAPS manager. Honorable Kalabana.
If I may assist, as you weren't on that. We've had situations going into the IPED offices and they said no, nothing was brought to them. Then we go to the local police station and they say, oh, well, actually there's a fellow in court for rape and there's another one in court for multiple rape today. And we say, did you not report this to the IPED? And then they look away. So things are happening and they just don't bother to tell you at all. So when you say there's nothing happening at the station, it may just be that they're not telling you. And we're not talking minor things. We're talking multiple. The one was for multiple rape and was in court that very day the committee was there. And they had not even thought to bother to tell you.
Director, and then we'll take another answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. The section which compels the police to report is section 29. And the section that deals with non-compliance or hindering or hampering the investigation, which includes non-reported non-compliance, the section 33. Our experience thus far, including the period before I arrived, was when we've taken it up and attempted to get a prosecution going for non-compliance, the DPPs in the various provinces have been reluctant to prosecute, and some have indicated blatantly they're not going to prosecute. What we've done in the meantime is engaged with the NPA and the Office of the National Director of Public Prosecutions to establish a MOU. A provision within the MOU will cover the fact that they will prosecute cases of non-compliance so that we begin eroding the sense of impunity which exists in with some elements in within SEPs.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think what the ED has alluded to, it has been a concern to us. And as he has indicated, we have taken it up at the highest level within the NPA. Because some of the reasons that were raised was that the NPA is not sure if the police were aware of this obligation, whereas the law is very clear that ignorance of the law can never be an excuse to contravening a law. Now, we have taken it up at the highest level in that regard. What happens is, when we become aware that police did not report to us any matter that was supposed to be reported to us, we then open a case against them and investigate that case and send it over for prosecution. Hence this issue of the reluctance by the prosecutors to prosecute. For instance, in the previous financial year, we had opened 65 cases of non-compliance against various police officers in this regard. So in those situations, for instance, that happened in the Eastern Cape, if we become aware of it, then we'll then lay charges against them and investigate cases criminally against those police officers because they failed to comply with the Act. So the extent of the support that we get, in our view, is that we do get support from SAPS management. There are instances where that support does not seem to permeate to the lowest level, and that is when we then engage with police management where we become aware of such a situation. But at the highest level, we do get that support. As the ED has indicated, the issue, for instance, of the MOU, which will be signed in a very short space of time. It's a testament to that. You know, the issues, for instance, that the ED has raised, that we said to them, whilst the Act may be saying, for instance, cases of assault in the execution of duties, but we are of the view that where members are also of duty, are not executing, they are not doing their job as police officers, but when we feel that it's in the public interest that we get involved in these matters, we will get involved. And that is something that has been acceptable from the police management side. On the question of why the percentage that we are giving, at our strategy deliberations, we look at variables. The variables like our capacity, and that will be the most overriding factor. What capacity do we have as a department in terms of completing these different categories of cases within 90 days? To what extent will we be able to complete these cases? And looking at also historical information, historical data that we have, that will inform us what we would think would be a reasonable percentage to put as something that would be achievable by the department. Remember also in respect of a treasury, in terms of our strategic documents, they are very clear that we should not put targets and outputs there that will not be possible for us to achieve because there won't be a point of us putting them there. So basically that those are the variables that we look at. Also the issue of the turnaround time with regard to that. The consultative forum in terms of the Act is specifically established for the interaction between ourselves and the civilian secretariat of the police. And basically is to look at issues of common interest between the two organizations related to the SAPS and MPS. Specifically, for instance, issues related to recommendations, whether the police are implementing our recommendations as they should. So those are the issues that will be dealt with. But as the executive director has indicated before, the issues of NDP will also come in there, because we'll also discuss how do we best, as oversight bodies, help the police in professionalizing the police. So those issues will also go into the consultative forum and to see how we best influence policy on professionalizing the police. On the issue of whether the police adhere to the reporting obligations, I've already dealt with that issue. Chairperson, with regard to the flow-centric and performance information, what happened is it is true that we're using a hybrid kind of situation where we have manual information that we keep for performance information, and we are also using flow-centric, because flow-centric had not yet been sufficiently enhanced to capture all the kind of performance information that we require for our reporting purposes. It was we decided that it was important that we also have a manual system that gives us this information. We have since been able to enhance flow-centric for the purposes of reporting purposes. For instance, for this financial year, the information that the AG will be using in terms of performance information that will be providing to them will be directly coming from flow-centric. We have a service level agreement with the service provider which is responsible for this system, and then we as and when we need to update the system, then that happens. But we're confident that the system will be fully operational in this current financial year. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I covered all
the questions. That's maybe the issue of a person that's responsible for dealing with the reporting of the performance information. And maybe just, again, maybe a question to the executive director. Can you give us a blanket undertaking or give us that confidence to say there's no problem in any province with SAPS working with IPED? You've got no problem. It's hunky-dory. They comply, and there's no provincial commissioner that doesn't want to talk or meet even with a provincial head of IPED. I just want to get that indication or assurance.
Thank you very much. Just as a follow-up, exactly on that point, it was said they've got 65 cases that of non-compliance that they have instituted. That would mean maybe from the police, from the prosecuting authority, surely the 65 is a mixture of all of that. Would in answering, then you might even answer who are those that were prosecuted for non-compliance, and would that be the reason why somewhere in your presentation you said you want physical security? And what does physical security mean? Do you want weapons with you every day, or do you want bodyguards? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Bailey, and then Honorable Molabachi, and then we'll go back to the executive director.
Thank you, Chair. My question relates to something that just occurred to me during the previous discussion, in particular the sub-program on investigation services. And it's an issue that's at the intersection of three issues that have come up in the past short while: underspending, staff shortages, and case backlogs. Now, my question is there currently provision, is it currently being implemented, or if not, is there thoughts to implement supplementation with private investigators who can work in an expertise-driven, focused way to kind of hack through the backlog in a significant way, and therefore ease pressure on the system.
Nombo Mulubati.
Thanks, Chair. One of the reasons why we moved from ICT to IPED was to give IPED teeth. Now, my question is, are these teeth really binding?
Thank you. Executive Director.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the first issue, the blanket reassurance, I can say on the face of it, there is cooperation and there's increasing cooperation in recent times. Whether that cooperation and willingness to assist always translates into action and responsiveness and action in terms of disciplinary process, I can't give a blanket reassurance on that one. With regards to the 65 cases, Mr. Sissoko will deal with that one just now. In regards to the physical security, as Honorable Molebatsi mentioned, the intention was to give the ICD teeth by translating it into IPED. Giving it teeth means it will go after people who are, let me put it differently. In every criminal syndicate that exists, every racketeering syndicate that exists, you need a policeman to make it happen. So to give us teeth to follow on those policemen who are involved in systemic corruption, involved in criminal syndicates, to answer then Honorable Markey's question, we will therefore elicit a response which will not be a hug or a kiss on the cheeks. We therefore need to be prepared for that. So before we can actually exhibit our teeth that we have, we need to make sure that we can deal with the response that will come. And that's the key issue that I was mentioning of those unfunded mandates which we have to deal with at the moment. Other Chapter 9 institutions, oversight bodies, they have, in some cases, institutions that are doing less dangerous work than us. They have a whole security component to deal with the issues. We have none. That means the teeth, Honorable Molebatsi, that we're supposed to have, we have to hold them in abeyance of usage until we receive that. Unfortunately, we cannot afford to do it because we are receiving cases, which comes to Honorable Mbele's point about private investigators helping us with backlogs. We can say, we can go on record and say a number of private investigators have assisted us are not on backlogs, but on investigations for free or gratis, which has enabled us to get to grips with some very complex investigations. So on that aspect, I think I've tried to explain the context of issues which will become very apparent soon that we will need to develop a protection capacity. It's critical. Otherwise, you'd be referring to us as late so-and-so and late so-and-so.
Yeah. The 65 cases you're referring to, specifically against the police, where we found that they failed to report to us. As Honorable Kolapana said, they've identified those cases. So, for instance, in those cases, if our people in the Eastern Cape find out that there was such failure to reporting, then we'll open criminal cases against those officers who have failed to report. You see, the issue that we are currently dealing with is the issue of the prosecuting authorities' failure to prosecute them. You know, so that is something that we said we've taken up just to deal with it so that we make sure that they're prosecuted. Because we believe that unless such time that these people are prosecuted, then they'll get to understand the importance of this reporting where they're not reporting. With regard to the person dealing, Honorable Chairperson, with the information, within the program investigation, we've got the sub-program within information management, which is statistics, that is responsible for information and performance information. We also have within directorate or sub-directorate database, which also deals with information, performance information. And we also have knowledge management, which also help in the analysis of the information that we receive.
Right, the last round before lunch, questions from the floor? Right, we will break now for lunch. We hopefully the lunch will arrive by air balloon. And then we will reconvene in about 15 to 20 minutes. Thanks a lot.